Blog Talk Radio.
Kane is in the building.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, alright. All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, alright.
I'm always wondering what the founders, what they thinking. Where's our Washingtons, our Thomas Paines, our Jeffersons and Lincolns? Why you had the red carpet club partying and drinking the USS Liberty is steadily sinking. So let me tell you what's really going on. Hope and change is code for your liberty's gone. Yes, we can. Propaganda for a socialist song. You need to realize he's breaking America's bond. His plan all along. And you need to realize that winning the future is just a future full of lies. He's wearing a disguise. Let us drill in the gulf. Because behind the sheep clothing, you know that you're just a wolf.
All
right.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, alright.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, alright. The heart of a coward caught in foreign policy. Forgets we are endowed by your creator. No apology rules, more like a king. Wait, we were just some colonies of patriots on Mars and creating the greatest following, especially with the president like Barack Hussein, who proved he'd rather be playing a golf game than take care of the lame, the sick and heavy laden. Instead of helping Libya, he just spit on the nation. But what can you expect from a FDR clone with no guts? You lost our trust, you ain't got a backbone. Chicago is your home, it shouldn't be DC. We the people speaking up. Tell me, can you hear? We all right.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, all right. All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, alright.
Barack is soon to set sail. Vote for O is just hope and fail. I'd rather have a tax break than any light rail. A Polish you can stick to with word from his campaign trail. His issue with integrity, it's just very evident. Guantanamo being only one piece of the evidence. Flip-flops to D.C. would be a nice sentiment. Come this election, I hope we change the president, alright.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, alright. All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God save the republic, we're not a democracy, alright.
Alright, it is, today's date is July 14th. In 2011, when beautiful Washington, D.C., the planet Earth, third planet from the sun. All right, where do we start here? Today's date, today's a very interesting day because I got an idea about what to talk about later in the day today based on news events, current events. And, you know, that's really how The way that I figure out what type of show I want to do is that I scan the news, mostly Fox News, Drudge Report, and then just come up with ideas as I go along as to what type of show I want to do and what the topic is going to be. So my topics are mostly born of current events, and so With the information gleaned earlier today about Obama losing his cool, I thought it would be a good idea to come up with a a show title called Drama Obama. And to be honest, that is the title is a headline from a couple of news outlets earlier today. You know, when President Obama started talking at his news conference on Monday, I listened as much as I could for a while, you know, about 10 minutes or so. Then I got fidgety as his half-truths about the debt grew into full-blown lies. As he droned on, I did something I never did before during an Obama appearance. I actually turned the TV off. I usually turn the sound down, but this time I turned the TV completely off. Enough. Obama is a man who won't listen to anybody. So why should anybody listen to him? I know that most of my friends, they don't, who are liberals and who support Barack Obama, don't really listen to his speeches. As usually, I'll ask them, "Well, what's going on in current events today?" And they have no idea. They don't know what's happening. And but anyway, I decided I was going to go ahead and tune it out and turned off the TV completely. Nobody's filled with gladness when he speaks. I mean, it's not usually something uplifting. It's usually some complaint about something that somebody else did, somebody's fault. He inherited this mess. You know, all the really embarrassing things. I'm tired of Barack Obama. There's nothing new there. His speeches are like Groundhog Day. His presidency is a spectacular failure. His historic mandate squandered by adherence to leftist ideology and relentless partisanship. His policies are crushing the prospects of growth and dooming the hopes of 24 million Americans who are unemployed or working part-time. Yet he's not going to change. He listens only to his own voice, which is why he has lost virtually his entire economic team. The biggest media myth is that he is a centrist. Yeah, that's the biggest media myth. It's a theory without evidence, for there is no single example on domestic issues where he voluntarily staked out a spot in the American middle. Yeah, on occasion, Obama would be on the right of the far, far, far left. But that's not the center. That just means he's not Michael Moore or Attila the Hun or Karl Marx or Adolf Hitler. Nor is he a centrist because he'll make a deal under duress with Republicans. As he did last December, all politicians have a pragmatic streak. Otherwise, they couldn't get anything done in a divided government. But Obama's default status position remains unmolested by facts of last year's landslide, shellacking. That was a rebuke of his first 2 years. He continues to push bigger and bigger government, higher and higher taxes, and more welfare programs. He will compromise if he must, but he still wants what he wants and will come back for it again and again. That's the subtext of the debt ceiling talks and his press conference recently on Monday. He voted against raising the ceiling as a senator, calling the need for an increase a failure. Now he's not embarrassed to demand a hike of about $2.5 trillion and more hair of the spending and taxing dog. He reveals his belief that your money is really the government's, and it will decide how much you can keep. The only cut he's comfortable with is the defense budget. He said It's time to pull off the Band-Aid and eat our peas. Translation, it's time for Republicans to give him everything he wants. That's his definition of being an adult and acting in the national interest, to give him what he wants. It's an amazing mess. Because if you don't give Obama exactly what he wants, how he wants it, when he wants it, then you're an obstructionist. You're not giving the man what he wants. So, you know, I wonder if the man has any shame whatsoever when he demands that he be given carte blanche to spend, 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 and more spending. Does it amaze you at all? Does it bother anyone? The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Obama's only concession to public will is to pretend he's got religion about the fiscal problems and wants a big deal. What he really wants is to get through the election. In answering a question about a poll showing that two-thirds of voters don't want the debt ceiling raised, he blew off 70 million Americans by saying they aren't paying attention. That's what he said, that we are not paying attention to what's going on. Yeah, Mr. Obama, we're paying attention. And we're paying attention, and that's why your poll numbers are dropping steadily. And America has very little confidence in your ability to lead this great country in a time of fiscal crisis. The United States of America has a very difficult time believing what Barack Obama says when the words are coming out of his mouth. We'll be right back after this brief message.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
We are Freedom Media Alliance. Freedom and entertainment defined. Find us on the web at freedommediaalliance.wordpress.com.
President Obama, quit lying. You know darn well that if August 2nd comes and goes, there's plenty of money to pay off our debt and cover all of our Social Security obligations. And you also know that you and only you have the discretion to make those payments. What's next, sir? Are you going to try and scare students and families and say that unless we raise the debt limit, you won't be able to make student loan payments? How about military families? Time to scare them and claim we won't have the money to pay their benefits? I know you have a willing media that protects everything you say and do, but have you no shame, sir? In 3 short years, you've bankrupted this country and destroyed job creation. You're either in over your head, you don't understand what makes this country great, or you're hell-bent in turning us into some European big government wasteland. You've spent money like a drunken sailor for 3 years, and now you tell us it's time to get serious about spending? No matter your motivation, the American people have woken up, and they're better and smarter than you think they are. They sent people like me to Congress in January to stop what you're doing. We will not raise your debt ceiling unless we pass a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. You see, President Obama, the American people don't trust politicians, yourself included. Unless we force politicians to balance their books every year, they won't. The only way to force them to do this is through a constitutional amendment. Quit playing politics with the debt ceiling vote, and quit lying to the American people. Show some leadership for once. The American people understand and support the balanced budget amendment. Virtually all Republicans do. You want to be useful and lead for a change? Go find 50 Democrats in the House and 13 in the Senate to support the balanced budget amendment. I don't have your bully pulpit, but I can speak into a camera. You don't like ultimatums? Tough. Here's my ultimatum. I won't place one more dollar of debt upon the backs of my kids and grandkids unless we structurally reform the way this town spends money. Come on, President Obama. Quit scaring the American people and quit talking about band-aids and peas. Lead for a change. Get members of your own party to support a balanced budget amendment.
You know, finally, folks are starting to talk tough to this guy. They're realizing that he is not made out of gold, that he is not the Messiah. He's not God. He's not Big Brother Almighty. He's just a man. A man who is completely out of his depth and incompetent. That was Congressman Joe Walsh, who accused President Barack Obama in a video release Wednesday of lying about the impact of not raising the national debt ceiling in the next 3 weeks. And he went on to ask, "Have you no shame, sir?" No, he doesn't have any shame. Answer that for you. Republican Joe Walsh says President Obama quit lying. He says there is plenty of money to pay the debt and cover Social Security, even if the limit isn't raised, and that is absolutely a fact. Walsh claims Obama will not get congressional approval to increase the $14.3 trillion debt limit unless the Democrat president backs a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, which Obama opposes. Obama says the country will default if Congress doesn't raise the ceiling by August 2nd. Here's the thing. You're the President of the United States of America. Your job is to protect the United States of America, to represent this great country, to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to basically manage the country. That's your job. All right, And that, if that is the case, then this guy's mismanaging the country. And worse, he is blaming everybody else for his failures. Had he been a Marine officer, a second lieutenant, mismanaging his platoon as a platoon leader, blaming his predecessor, blaming everybody else for why he can't get his platoon in order, he would have been drummed out of the Marine Corps by the first 6 months. And I'm making the correlation because we're talking about leadership here. A leader does not place blame on anybody else. A leader does not say, it's not my fault. A leader doesn't say, I inherited this mess. A leader says, I'm in charge. I'm taking charge. I'm going to fix this problem. And if I don't fix it, you can get somebody else. He doesn't blame the weather, as Obama did a few days ago. He doesn't blame the fact that the debt ceiling might not be raised. He doesn't blame inanimate objects. He doesn't blame teller machines, ATM machines, technology. He takes charge. This guy does not take charge. He is a clown. He thinks we're stupid. And he's not doing his job. And that's the bottom line here, folks. Now, let's get back to what I was talking about here. Because I think it's pretty important. In answering a question about a poll showing that 2/3 of voters don't want the debt ceiling raised, he blew off 70 million Americans by saying they aren't paying attention. I'm the smartest guy in the room. They don't understand. There's no novel campaign theme. Elect me because you're too dumb to understand how smart I am. That's what he's saying. That's exactly what he's saying. Harry Truman ran against a do-nothing Congress. Obama is running against a know-nothing nation. We're all a bunch of morons. We don't know what's best for us. Only Obama knows what's best for us. Don't you understand? Only Obama knows what's best for us. He can never be wrong. But we always are. Unless we agree with him. This is the story of Obama's presidency. That is who he is. He is passing the buck. Even Harry Truman said the buck stops here. Every leader, if any of you who are listening to the sound of my voice right now or later know what it means to be a leader, you know that a leader does not place blame. A leader does not say it's not my fault. A leader does not say, I inherited this mess. We inherited a big mess. A leader doesn't do that. A leader takes charge. He takes ownership. He does the best he can. And if he doesn't do a good enough job, he admits that he didn't. And he... That's what leadership is all about. In my 30 years serving as a United States Marine officer, enlisted and officer, I could have never gotten away with placing blame on anybody else or anything else. This guy places blame on inanimate objects, ATM machines, on the weather, for the reason why we are suffering from 9.2 unemployment rate. When the figures came out a few days ago, he blamed the weather. He blamed uncertainty about the debt limit being raised, natural disasters, all kinds of stuff. He never took ownership, not once. Billy writes in the chat room, he lied when he took his oath of office. Why expect better later? You're right. You're right, Billy. We don't expect better. I don't expect any better. Sometimes, you know, Billy... you know what? Here's what I think. Sometimes I think the guy, I hope he's going to have an epiphany and say, you know what? I'm a left-wing nut job. And it was okay when I was a community organizer going door to door. And I had this philosophy. But now I'm president of the United States and I'm responsible for all this government, all of these people. People around the world are looking up to me. There's no time for this sort of ideological thinking. I've got to do my job. I keep hoping that he'll come around, but he won't. In a devastating critique of the new city budget, the Citizens Budget Commission predicts Mayor Bloomberg and the city council will soon be forced to back to the drawing board to do what they should have done last month. They're in trouble. Everybody's in trouble financially. The city of New York is in trouble. We're in a big mess. All over the country, state local governments are collapsing. And this guy, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to him, obviously. Faced with the reality that his policies have failed to spur significant job growth, any significant job growth, President Obama is blaming technology for high unemployment. How low can you go? Blaming technology for unemployment. During a recent NBC News interview, Obama said, "There are some structural issues with our economy where a lot of businesses have learned to become much more efficient with a lot fewer workers. You see it when you go to the bank and you use an ATM. You don't go to a bank teller. Or you go to the airport and you're using a kiosk instead of a checking in at the gate. What an idiot." The question was asked by Congressman Joe Walsh, "Have you no shame, sir?" When the President of the United States stoops to blaming inanimate objects, machinery, for the reason why the employment rate is so high, what is left to do but shake your head and think, is this guy for real? Well, take a listen to what Marco Rubio has to say about this, president.
So, Senator, it's obvious that the only people standing in the way of America being productive again are the rich.
According to Barack Obama, he has a fundamental misunderstanding or a deliberate misunderstanding of how the nature of our economy and how people make decisions. I challenge him to find a single job creator in the world who says they're looking for a place that has burdensome regulations and high taxes and complicated taxes. Jobs are created when an individual in the private sector starts a business or grows an existing business, and you do that by giving them a sane regulations, sane tax code that's simple to comply with, and reasonable tax rates that they can afford to pay. You do that, people will invest in America. You fail to do that, they're going to invest somewhere else.
With the mix of this proposed tax increases and the health care bill, is this potentially the most aggressively anti-small business president that we've seen?
Well, certainly in my lifetime. I mean, I don't remember Jimmy Carter, but I think President Obama is trying to compete with Jimmy Carter for a title of worst president in American history.
Okay, there you have it. Marco Rubio, who has often been critical of Barack Obama, he is competing for the title of worst president in history. And that's got to make some people wonder. Because he came in the office as this godlike figure. He was supposed to bring us all together, wasn't he? He was supposed to usher in a new type of politics, but that didn't work out that well, did it? Thumpin, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. How you doing, my man?
Great. This is Victor from Insane Government, WOW Media.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing great as well. I love the show, and, I heard what you said, what Barack said about the ATMs and the other stuff, and how he's blaming. I don't want to switch the topic, but I wanted to get right in at that point. And by the way, I have Craig in the line as well, so...
Oh, great. Hey.
He decided to hang up. I'm going to call him back, but let's see if he does that. But besides that, I want to get back to the point. The ATM machine and that whole issue is dealing with this. He doesn't understand that with the deal with ATMs, is that, okay, you may use the ATM, you may not use a teller. but it doesn't mean job is lost. You still have to make that ATM machine, right? You still have to move that ATM machine, right? And transport it and fix it. That's still job. He's just not looking further than two cases of economic activity, you know.
That's exactly. Your phone is breaking up, but yeah, I got the point. You're exactly right, and I made this point a few days ago. I made the point the day he said it. He uttered this asinine statement. You're right, and for those of you who didn't hear, to be serviced. Someone has to repair the machines when they go broke. Someone has to put the money. Support the machines, create them, manufacture them. For every ATM machine, there is, from what I have gleaned from my research, 15 people who are unemployed as a result of an ATM machine. Why doesn't Barack Obama know that? He's supposed to be the smartest man in the room, Victor. Why doesn't he?
I'll tell you.
You know what? He knows. He is saying this really asinine thing because he thinks that we don't know. Yeah.
There you go. You're right. 100% right. You hit the nail on the head there. He knows. He knows. He went to college. He studied Keynesian economics. He knows the effects of it. Remember that little stupid picture of him using the chalkboard? Look closely at what's written on that chalkboard. He's doing economics. He knows.
He definitely knows.
And it's not a conspiracy theory. He knows. And you're right. He knows we don't know. Well, most of us don't know.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, we have to get informed, and then you'll have nowhere else to go. The sheep are going to be awakened, and the shepherd can't, you know, round us up anymore. So that's my little philosophy there. Just get informed.
And exactly. And as I stated earlier during the last bit of the segment, he believes that we're not paying attention. And you know what? It was stated by one of his staff that the American people aren't paying attention to the daily job figures and what goes into the daily job numbers. Why do they believe that we're not paying attention? That we're not stupid? That we're stupid? That we're not educated in the ways of what's going on with this country? Why do they believe? What gives them the auspice to believe that we're not paying? I know there are some folks out there who are not paying attention. I have some friends out there but they don't want to. They don't want to know. It's not because they're not educated. They don't want to know. They're busy going on with their lives, and maybe that's what this guy means when he says these things, that people are going on with their everyday lives and are not paying attention to what's going on. That's true in some cases, but more and more, as we go deeper and deeper into the depths of despair in this country, folks are educating themselves. Mm-hmm. And Barack Obama is going to see the results of that in 2012. There are people who are saying he's bulletproof and that he will be reelected, and he's a shoo-in because the Republicans don't have a worthy candidate just yet. But you know what? I don't believe that at all.
But you know, I'll say this right now. All these candidates, even if I have some favorites myself, all of them have the capability of beating Barack. All of them have the capability of beating them. The problem lies is like, okay, we got a whole bunch of good candidates, but how do you mix them out? It's like too many good things. Like if you have this is just my liking of cars. If you have like Mercedes, Audi, and Porsche, you know, this is my thing, and like a Dodge Challenger. So many different wonderful cars, in my opinion. And you put them up against a Toyota, like, you know, regular, like Civic, whatever it is. Honda Civic, let's put it that, Honda Civic. Obviously, it's going to beat the Honda Civic. But now, which one's the best? It's very hard to decide, you know? So that's the thing I think we're having a problem with. You know, we definitely can beat them, I think, so.
Yeah, I am concerned that Bachman is surging in the polls, and her numbers are getting higher. I'm not so sure she can beat him, but I know there's a man out there who can. There's a candidate out there, and he's from Texas. His name is Rick Perry, and he's my best bet to beat Barack Obama in 2012. Who do you have? Who's your
My favorite candidate, and a lot of people don't like it, but, well, not a lot of people, but some, is Ron Paul. Ron Paul's my favorite. I liked him in 2008. I like him again. But if I had a number two, definitely, most definitely would be Rick Perry, my man. And especially, I love that picture of him with that revolver in his hand and just, like, shoving it. You know, that was an awesome picture. People said he's being violent and being inappropriate. What's he being inappropriate about?
Exactly. And I tell you what, the ultimate ticket, and a lot of people are talking about what the ticket I'm about to announce just now. A lot of folks are talking about it over the last couple of weeks. A Rick Perry, Marco Rubio ticket would be unbeatable. However, Marco Rubio says that he will not accept a vice presidential nomination, or he will not he won't run on the ticket as a vice presidential candidate, and that was not good news for me. I think that in the way the country, here's what I think: if there's a ticket out there that in a lot of folks' mind is an unbeatable ticket, and a lot of people are saying that a Rick Perry Marco Rubio ticket is unstoppable, then to my mind, being selfish about it, Marco Rubio owes it to the country just to get Barack Obama out of office and attempt to save this country, to bring us back from the brink. Don't you agree? I think that put your personal issues aside and then run, because there are people out there in the Congress and the Senate who are saying that if Barack Obama gets another turn, there won't be an America, at least not as we know it. And these are not fringe kooks; these are well respected congressmen and senators who are saying
also economists.
Yeah,
very important. Peter Schiff, one who predicted the recession, also one of them being Ron Paul. I wouldn't say he's much of an economist, but many people like him and others are saying the same exact thing. So if we have the continuous policies of Barack's, but if we get somebody in office different and uses the same policies as Barack, because you never know, we will go down the toilet completely. We have a problem with this debt ceiling right now, and I have a couple ideas myself. I agree with Cantor's idea. But we're having the trouble right now with the debt ceiling and how we're going to compromise this. And it's just going to be unbelievable. The Democrats want to put a couple of billions of dollars in tax hikes. I'm like, that's not going to be the solution. I'm sorry, dude. You know, New Jersey, we have one of the worst tax problems. We made the millionaire tax, and we kicked almost 80% of the most wealthiest Americans, from New Jersey in our state out. They moved to Canada. They moved to the Kingdom Islands. And our debt went up. They wanted to tax them to pay off the debt in New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
They left, had nobody else to tax, our debt went up. People of the United States, understand what we did, a mistake in New Jersey. Don't repeat it. Don't repeat it. It's not going to happen. You cannot just tax your way out of this. It's not going to happen. Don't tax this rich, because they're going to leave, and then we're going to be in a worse position. Don't do it. New Jersey's in a big hole. We don't need the whole government, even and the whole federal government, the whole country, to be in a deeper hole after we do this. Don't do it. That's my warning. Look at New Jersey. I live here. And I was meeting with the Chambers of Commerce today because we were doing some business meetings down in Bergen County Chambers of Commerce, I believe it is, and we were discussing the same exact thing. Just don't do it. Don't do it. It's still hurting us today in New Jersey.
Well said. Well said, and I couldn't agree more. You know, the number of Americans who believe the country is on the wrong track rose to 63% just this month, up from 60% in June. With stubbornly high unemployment and prolonged gridlock in Washington dashing the hopes of a swift economic recovery, and I'm reading this from Reuters, which states that Americans are deeply pessimistic about the future. As economies concern rise and White House talks on raising the U.S. debt limit sputter, according to Reuters. Also, it says that voters do not appear to be holding President Barack Obama responsible for the problem so far, which I found to be astounding. Is the guy just, what is happening? I mean, why are they not holding him responsible for it? Are folks believing that it's a mess that he inherited?
Well, that, you know, with all of this, you know, and I'm not finding it surprising that people are thinking the economy is getting worse, because it is, I would say, getting worse. The dollar's having a troubled time. Our market's having a little bit of troubled time, even though it has been getting up a little bit, I believe, with the Dow. But unemployment's hurting. Dollar's hurting. Not getting better. And now people really don't know who to pin the blame on here. Now, for this whole thing, it's really impossible to pin the blame on this recession on Barack. And I tell you, it's hard to pin it on Bush, too. But who you can actually hit this is you have to date this back to all these happenings and stuff all the way back to the 1960s and 70s, believe it or not, with Fannie and Freddie. That is the source of this big housing bubble. And everybody from that point on up and who did not do enough is just simply as part of the problem. The Republicans had this troubled time dismantling it. I give them credit for trying to do it, even after all the bad rhetoric against him and the name-calling and stuff. They tried their best because they were called anti-poor, anti-woman. It was just ridiculous. They tried their best. They couldn't do it. So then it was just all problems from in there after it hit 2000. And it got even worse. And Bush tried to fix it, you know, spend more. It didn't work. Barack comes in, spend more. It doesn't work. And it's still not working. So you really have to look down the line. Everyone holds a little bit of responsibility, but when you go up the line, it's not that they caused it, like Bush and Barack, but they definitely made it worse, and Barack holds most of that, making this whole thing worse. I don't know why he did the stimulus, made no freaking sense, but he did it anyways, and it just been detrimental to this country ever since.
Well, here's the thing. We've had, during the course of history, we have had a number of recessions. And I'm not so sure that all of the recessions can be blamed on any president. We've had the recession of 1802 to 1804, and that lasted 2 years. The time since the previous recession before that was 3 years. We had a depression in 1807, from 1807 to 1810, which lasted 3 years. We had a recession in 1812, which lasted 6 months. We had a recession in 1815 through 1821, which lasted 6 years, and it took 6 years to recover. Which lasted 6 years. We had a recession in 1822 to 1823. We had a recession from 1825 to 1826. We had another recession from 1828 to 1829. We had another recession from 1833 to 1834. I could go on and on. Right up until the Great Depression, America has suffered fits and starts economically. You know, we are a major country, and are in the intricacies of our economy and the free market system dictate that we'll have a bit of a roller coaster every now and then. But a lot of how fast we get out of our recessions, how quickly we recover, is dependent upon the decisions that are made by our government leaders.
Exactly.
And how they handle things. And in this case, the president, our current president, should not be blamed for the recession, just like none of the other presidents shouldn't be blamed for it, in my mind. But he is certainly not making things easier. He's not fostering an air of confidence in the markets, in the free market economy, in the free market system, and with small businesses, chamber of commerce. He's doing everything ass backwards, and it's simply not working.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about a little bit before about the machinery fallacy he was trying to point at. You know, that just shows how much he's lacking on the free market side of, you know, with this economics and stuff. Because again, you know, we have to resort to what he actually studies. You know, it's not like he's stupid, because like believing in one ideology doesn't make you necessarily stupid. It's just you look at them wrong or whatever. He believes, like we came on the show before, he believes in Keynesianism, and that is one of the top notch things. Is with the machinery fallacy. That's a top notch thing. Putting artificial low interest rates during recession, That is a top-notch thing by the Keynesians. Spending your way out of recession, top-notch thing on the Keynesians. It's not like he's making this stuff up out of the air. This is all from his little book called The General Theory, made by Mr. Keynes himself. Okay, mm-hmm. And everyone else around him, Ben Bernanke, Tim Geithner, all of them read the same book. I read it, everybody else reads it, but guess what? They follow it to the heartbeat, to the whole thing, and they believe it. People like Paul, people like other congressmen, senators, they don't believe in it, but they're not up there yet. I know Paul's in the finance committee, I believe that is, right? But he's more like an Austrian. He believes in the human action book. He believes in more capitalistic ways, not government intervention. And that's why, also, I believe another thing we have to do. With moving people into presidency, we have to also move people, well, we can't do it. We just have to kind of assure that something may happen and hope that people who are into these, into the finances of this country are not Keynesians, but Austrians. That is something we dearly need in this country. Now, we really can't elect them into there, but we definitely can put a person who can influence Austrians in there. You got a Keynesian as a president, you're going to get Keynesian financiers. You're going to get an Austrian as a president, you're going to get Austrians as financiers. That happened in the past. There's been other people who are not necessarily Austrians, but laissez-faire type of people and had laissez-faire type of administration. That is something we have to aim for.
Exactly, exactly. We have another call on the line, 111. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Yes, I have a question. I have two questions.
Oh, hell no.
Oh,
is that you, Mays?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. Yes,
so all the other stuff the guy was talking about.
How are you this evening?
I'm just fine.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Because I like to help make some sense out of the nonsense that I hear sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what we've been hearing, Dave, all the time. But if you got a recession, if you came into office, and then you got a, when people that was in office before you were spending money but were not using it for the purposes it should have been, so when you come into office, and you got to spend the money to pay for what was not paid for before you got there. So isn't that going to put you in a bind? Hello?
Mays, honestly, I didn't understand a word of that.
Well, what's the question?
I asked him if you took over a job, and the people that was over the job before you got there was buying stuff but never paying for it, and you took it over, and you got to pay for it when you get there. So wouldn't that put you short of the things that you were going to do when you got there?
Robert, are you understanding the question?
No, no.
I know you don't want to understand it. It was perfectly clear.
No. I want to hear it. I'm serious.
Oh, I was asking you if you took over a job as a corporate person over a job, over a company.
Okay.
But the person that was there in your place before you got there was just spending, but not paying for it. But after you got there, you had to use the money that you had prepared to use for something else and pay for the bills that they didn't pay.
Okay, this is, I think I kind of get your question. Mm-hmm. If I was in President Obama's position, from what George Bush did with the TARP funds and all he did similar to the stimulus, I would immediately stop those fundings and give it back to the American people. We don't need to spend it. The problem
saying,
is government.
That's not what I'm saying.
Okay. Then
I'm asking you if the person that was in the job before you was doing stuff but was not paying for it, somebody had to pay the bill at the end. Didn't they?
So you're saying like George Bush was doing something, paying something.
Wars without all the wars and different things were not being paid for. Some of the things that happened was not being paid for. So when the president came in office, somebody had to pay those bills, just like now. Somebody got to pay the bills.
Well, I think, were they paid or the TARP?
No, they weren't. And then when you got other countries holding notes to your country, and everything. That's why I'm saying
that's more of a debt problem then, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
if I was in debt before, I wouldn't want to spend more to get myself in more debt. That wouldn't make that much sense.
No. If you spent what you had, if what you had when you got there, you thought you was going to be spending, but after you finally looked through the books that you had a debt to pay that was due, and you used that money that you was going to spend for the people, and you couldn't spend it in order to keep other people surviving, and what else were you to do?
Okay, this is what I believe. If we had money left over, for whatever it was, I would give it back to the people who I took it from. What do you mean spent to help the people?
That's what I'm saying.
If we
like the TARP money that he had,
We shouldn't spend it on public works. It's completely a wrong idea. If we had any money left over, we should have either gave it back or, you know, at least pay off the debt. But it wasn't public works. TARP funds is a wrong idea. Don't spend it on anything. If you use this ideology, what you do is you divert private sector resources from
the
private sector.
The private sector is just a problem anyway, from the get-go right. Private sector. Because the reason why I say the private sector is a problem.
No, it's a good thing it's in the private sector.
Anything private, you've got to take a look at. Because
all
you
right.
Take a private...
Mace, hold on a minute. We have another call on the line, but stay right there. Don't go
but
away.
But I was talking to him. I was having a conversation with him.
Hold on. Wait a minute
okay.
Now. Craig, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Hey, how you doing, Robert? How you doing,
all right.
Victor? And what was the caller's name? Other caller's
Mace.
Name?
Mace.
Mace.
M-A-Z-E.
Okay.
That's what it is. What?
Mace. Yes.
All right.
Like the corn.
All right.
They're like Frankie Beverly Amaze or Amazing Grace, whichever one
right.
You want to take. Yes.
Or corn, cream corn.
No, it's Maze.
All right, okay.
Corn has nothing to do
okay.
With it.
All right.
I have a very good question here. Your theory is that President Obama if a pass because of the
I'm not giving him a pass. It's just like if you understand how to work, use your money, and not your money use you,
mm-hmm.
You will understand what the president had to do. It's like
mm-hmm.
say you had a person in your family that died, and all of his bills were left behind, but you thought you had out of his will, you thought you had something left, but you had to turn around and pay all the bills, and then you didn't have anything left for the family.
Mm-hmm.
So then that means what do you do? And then you got
mm-hmm.
a congressman up there that's
right.
Not working because half of them got portions into what he's trying to change. That's why we
okay.
don't change.
Okay. Well, that's false. And here's why. This happens in the private sector all of the time. If you have a company that is failing, and it is a large part due to the leadership, because the problems with any organization always starts at the leadership of an organization. And if your company is failing, you do not fire a CEO, or if the CEO leaves, you do not hire a CEO to continue the failed leadership of the previous CEO that was failing. And
go through the papers and make sure.
So, all right, well, this will work a lot easier if you let me finish and then you can respond. So with Barack Obama, I am no big fan of George W. Bush's domestic policies, period. I support a lot of his foreign policy, and we can talk about that, but that's really not what we're talking about. And so his domestic policies and spending was abhorrent, and there was nothing conservative about George W. Bush's domestic policies. Now, the problem is that Barack Obama has only exacerbated those spending policies and domestic policies of George W. Bush. He's done the same things that aren't going to work. And like in the private sector, what happens if you have a company that is spending more than it's making and has dug itself into a large hole, an effective CEO will come in and just start slashing. And the problem is, and it came out in his interview, Barack Obama has no coherent thoughts when it comes to economics. He understands economics without a doubt, but good fiscal economic policies for the United States is not part of a progressive's agenda, because a progressive knows that they need to tear down the framework of the United States in order to institute the policies that they want, which are socialistic and communistic in nature. So it is really not on President Obama's agenda to really have a fiscally sound United States, because he does understand economics without a doubt. So he understands how to tear down the economics of the United States. And so he does not want to stop spending. If you listen to if you listen to his press conference the other day, I believe it was Tuesday, He basically said what he thinks about the government. He explicitly said that he thinks that the people want new programs.
Hold on, Mays. Let the man finish, and then yes,
you're right.
Yes. Go on, Craig, and then
that's pretty
Mays
much it. He basically it came out when he was towards the mid section of the speech. He said explicitly, this is something I want to deal with. I want to talk about things like new programs and things of that nature. That's what a progressive thinks about the government. It's new programs, new ways in order to capture control of the people through dependency on programs, and it takes money to fund these programs. So, I mean, that's about it. I mean, it's in a nutshell. This is the same thing we've been talking about ever since the man started running for president. These are the things that we knew. Individuals who can constructively think and read between the lines of the rhetoric. So,
all right, Mays, you want to go ahead and respond to that?
I said, well, his rhetoric that he's spitting out is what I was saying. Well, private businesses, what he had to take some of the stimulus money and help them to keep them from going on. You keep on
he didn't
private,
have to
private.
Do anything.
Yes,
no.
He didn't have
did.
To do anything, period.
Yes,
he did not.
No.
He's not and for He was actually.
Your
no,
point of view, that's what
point
you
of,
think.
It's not my point
you
of view.
You don't know. What are your
let
solutions?
Let me tell you something, Mays. He did not have to, and actually he did not have the authority. That's the problem. We do not live in a country that is governed by public mandate. We have a country that is governed by the rule of law through the Constitution of the United States, and that president had no authority whatsoever to take public funds and give it to any private sector company. That is not the role of the federal government. That is unconstitutional, period.
Mays, a response?
I'm asking them, is the constitutional what we see the Congress doing? I don't think so.
Well, if we want to talk about
the
Congress.
They are supposed to be the one to make the laws,
Congress?
And he's supposed to sign them into law. He hadn't received anything to sign into law because they're so busy being fools and acting like they long lost their man. Because he's the president.
What?
I said they're so busy being fools. Instead of doing
how are they being fools?
Because they're
how,
not doing their job.
We have had a foolish Congress.
We still got
for
one.
Quite some time.
We still got one.
What is?
I think
what
we got
is,
a better one.
Are you specifically talking about this debt deal?
I'm talking about both sides, the Democrats and the Republicans. Because if they were doing their jobs, the country wouldn't be in the shape that it's in today.
Right, but I'm specifically. Can
but,
we need to talk about specific policies? There are.
What policies have they put on his desk? None.
Well, actually, that's what we don't need is new policies. That's one of the problems is that we have too many pieces of legislation.
We don't have too many pieces of legislation. We need to cut out some of the bickering and some of the things that they're benefiting from. Because when you always want to say take the Social Security and all this stuff, and then when it comes to getting their benefits, why don't they have to wait till they turn 80 to pick up their benefits? But no, if you would never hear the Congress do anything with that. They should have to be 80 when they pick up their benefits.
Historically, if you look at the economic conditions throughout the history of the United States, you will find that a majority of our greatest periods of prosperity come from, such as before the Industrial Revolution, we had a part-time Congress, and we had a situation where we spurred the Industrial Revolution of the freaking world, and that came about from a part-time Congress with very limited very limited industrial oversight. And if you look at the 90s, when we had a Congress, you had a great halt because you had sort of the situation that we have now in the mid early 90s. You had the actual government shutdown. And then you had, after that, you had a lot of prosperity in the 90s. The government gets in the way of you personally being prosperous. We have the ability to manage our own lives, period.
All right, all right. Hold on, Craig. It was great. The show is over in 22 seconds.
Oh,
you guys are all great. I'm going to have to start going back to an hour and 30 minutes because we don't have enough time to get all this good stuff out. 10 seconds left. Oh, no, thank you. I mean, thank you. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Victor. Thank you, Mays. Yeah. Thank everybody who came to visit in the show. Annie, Antoinette, Beach Bomb, Billy, CFGA, Craig, everybody, all the guests, thank you for being here. I really do appreciate you guys coming to the show and listening, taking time out of your busy evenings to listen. Thank you very much. We are out. The show is over. Have a good night. I'll see you tomorrow. Good night.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil away. You don't have to worry.